Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, January 6th is looming. We go through the precedent, we go through the history, and what Vice President Mike Pence can do. Also, we go through this bizarre prayer that happened on the floor of the House of the Representatives. Amen and ah, woman. And finally, should you vote in the Georgia runoff? Quick answer, yes. If you like what you hear and you want to get behind what we're doing, you say, Charlie, I love your show. I listen to it every day when I drive to work or when I walk the dogs or whatever you do. And you want to get behind what we're doing and help our production team expand and really help get behind us, go to charliekirk.com/support. Become a supporter of The Charlie Kirk Show right now at charliekirk.com/support. And this episode is brought to you by our friends at ExpressVPN. If you want to protect against big government, big brother, and big tech, go to expressvpn.com/charlie. Get that VPN on right now. I have it on my phone. And it really protects your devices beautifully. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. January 6th is looming. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
What a week we have in store here. And as we start this new year, we are going to be right here going into the wee hours of the evening for the Georgia runoff on the January 6th fight and so much more. This week is going to determine the future of our republic. It's that simple. So breaking over the weekend, there was some surprise news. Over the weekend, 12 United States senators, in addition to Senator Josh Hawley from Missouri, have come out and said they are going to object to the Electoral College votes. Now, what does that mean? Well, as we have walked through in great detail on our podcast, I encourage all of you to take out your phones and type in the Charlie Kirk Show podcast. And if you really want to dive deep into the history, into the background, into the constitutional foundation of what we're talking about here, we have done hours of podcasts going into this. But on January 6th, it all comes together. January 6th is the most important, the final date, the constitutional date. A lot of these other dates are kind of suggestions. They're statutory. This is constitutional. So on January 6th, the results of the Electoral College will literally and physically be brought in big boxes to Congress. The president of the Senate, who is the vice president of the United States, Mike Pence, will oversee the counting. The Constitution clearly states that the president of the Senate shall, in the presence of the Congress, count the votes. Now, congressional statute allows objections to be made. If a member of the House and the member of the Senate both object in writing to a certain state's electoral results, they will break into their own separate chambers, listen to arguments for no more than 2 hours. Now, whether it's 2 hours per objection or not remains to be seen. We're not sure. There's differing opinions, but it's really up to Mike Pence. They will vote on the objection and they'll come back and present their findings to the president of the Senate, Mike Pence. Now, there are 435 members of the House of Representatives, and there are 100 senators, obviously. The list is growing of senators that are objecting. This is the first time that we are seeing a group this large object to presidential results from the Electoral College. Let's read off the good guys, because I think we give a lot of tough love to Republicans at times. We're going to do that later in the show. Just ask me about Raffensperger and we'll get into that. But when Republicans show courage, when they show spine, the good guys deserve to be recognized. These are senators that have pledged to support an objection on January the 6th. Steve Daines, a friend of mine. We helped him a lot at Turning Point Action. Ted Cruz, another friend of mine, a good American. Josh Hawley, he's got a great future ahead of him. James Inhofe from Oklahoma, a good man. Ron Johnson, another good man. Been a guest on the Charlie Kirk Show podcast. John Kennedy from Louisiana. He's always fun. Roger Marshall from Kansas, newly minted senator. James Lankford from Oklahoma. Pleasantly surprised to see him, I have to say. Cynthia Lummis from Wyoming, another friend of mine, a new senator. She used to be a congresswoman. Good for her. Marsha Blackburn. Mike Braun, who we have given, I think, a good amount of criticism towards this last year. He complimented the terrorist organization BLM Incorporated. But now he's doing the right thing on this. Good for you, Mike Braun. Thank you for taking a stand for our country. And Tommy Tuberville. That's the list. So that's 12. Now, courage deserves to be recognized. And so that's what we're doing. In addition, the rumor mill is telling us that over 180 members of the House of Representatives will object. Now, if you have six states that are in question, Nevada, Georgia, Arizona, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan, six states and 2 hours per objection for both houses could be upwards of 24 hours of debate. It's about to be a circus. And guess what? We're going to be here for all of it on the Charlie Kirk Show live stream. Every debate, every objection, we are going to be covering it live. We are at Turning Point Action helping with the big event in Washington. One of the reasons we're not going is because I want to kind of quarterback and see and analyze and communicate to all of you exactly what is going to be happening on January the 6th. And so these objections are promising, but they're not enough. Where is John Barrasso? Where is Roy Blunt? John Boozman. I was going to say, where is Cory Booker? Because I'm reading the entire roster. I think it's fair to say Cory Booker is not going to object to this. Where is Richard Burr? Probably insider trading. Shelley Moore Capito, probably asking for our support so she can get reelected. Mitch McConnell, nowhere to be found. Jerry Moran from Kansas, nowhere to be found. Lisa Murkowski, might as well be a Democrat. Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham goes out and asks for all of our support and all of our backing. Nowhere to be found. Chuck Grassley. I think Chuck's going to come around. I think he's going to surprise us. I have a soft spot for Chuck Grassley. Bill Hagerty has supported. Good for him. There's so many bad U.S. senators. I'm reading this list. It's so depressing for the future of our republic. John Hoven from North Dakota, MIA. Cindy Hyde-Smith, really glad she asked for all the president's support in her runoff in Mississippi. Nowhere to be found. Isn't it funny how all these establishment senators, they want the MAGA support, they need the Trump support, but when he needs them to object to polluted and poisoned election results? MIA. Remember that, everybody. Bill Cassidy, MIA. Susan Collins, wouldn't expect anything from her. John Cornyn, really glad that we all stepped up and helped him. Tom Cotton, I'm going to get to in a second because he has a thoughtful dissent that I completely disagree with. Kevin Cramer, really glad we helped him out. Mike Crapo, I met him over the summer. I hope he does the right thing here. I think he might. Joni Ernst, yeah, really glad we all rallied for Joni in Iowa. That's going to be really helpful. Deb Fisher, waste of time. Marco Rubio, I think Marco might come around. I actually think Marco might come around. I'm going to hold out for that. Ben Sasse, forget it. Rick Scott, Tim Scott. I'm going to keep going through the roster because I think it's important we go name by name of every U.S. senator that has courage or for whatever reason doesn't want to fight right now. Rob Portman, not supporting the objection to the Electoral College. I am going to tell you my least favorite argument as soon as I get through this whole list, because every person needs to be named. By the way, we got an email here at freedom@charliekirk.com. You guys can email us anytime. I'll try to look at them during the break. Someone says, Charlie, you're not naming the Democrats. Why? I would be repeating myself by just naming Democrats to not object. We know it's complete uniform that they're not even going to entertain this. Senator Risch from Idaho, nowhere to be found. Senator Mitt Romney. Ha, that's a surprise. Senator Mike Rounds from South Dakota. Senator Rand Paul, a good friend of mine, has yet to object. And I am putting an asterisk by his name because both Tom Cotton and Rand Paul have, I think, thoughtful reasons. I disagree with them on this. Rand Paul actually hasn't said whether or not he'll do it. I understand where Senator Paul's thinking is here. And Senator Paul has had our country, our Constitution, and our president's back. And so Senator Paul is not on my list of criticism. He's been phenomenally courageous. Richard Shelby, though, nowhere to be found. MIA. Dan Sullivan, we went and helped him out in Alaska. John Thune. MIA. Tom Tillis. Do you think all those Trump voters would have come out of the hills and come out of the rivers and come out of the valleys? Would they know that Tom Tillis would not have the president's back when it matters? Pat Toomey resigning soon. Tommy Tuberville is objecting. Good for him. Roger Wicker, nowhere to be found. And then Todd Young from Indiana, M-I-A. So there are 12 senators. We anticipate about 180 House members, including Congressman Kevin McCarthy, who is leading the charge and is in favor of the objection. Kevin McCarthy is a friend of mine, and I have to say thank you, Kevin, for doing that. He deserves credit for that. And I can say that Congressman Kevin McCarthy signaling that support is a sea change difference from Paul Ryan and John Boehner. Deserves credit for that. Now, my least favorite argument when I go through this list, and I've spoke to some senators, and I'm going to get into Ben Sasse, Tom Cotton, and with it, Senator Rand Paul's argument. And Rand Paul's argument is a little bit different. But Sasse and Cotton, and Tom Cotton's a friend of mine, so I have to preface by saying that and he's been phenomenal on the BLM, phenomenal on the statues. He's been phenomenal on all of it. But I want to dive into his argument because I just don't agree with it. I think it's wrong. So, but I put Cotton and Rand Paul in a different category. Here's why. It's not like they're afraid of a fight. They have fought on every single front. I just think they have a philosophical difference here. Ben Sasse on the other side, we'll get into that. But the argument that I can't stand that is privately being circulated amongst many members of Congress is, well, this is going to fail. If you judge the likelihood of success as to whether or not you fight, then you are not actually fighting. You are waging and hedging your involvement based on the probability of success. Fighting and contesting for truth should happen irrespective of whether or not you think the odds are in your favor, especially when the stakes are this high. So a week ago, just to give you an idea, a week ago, we had zero publicly announced senators. I think maybe Hawley was a week ago. I think it was 5 or 6 days ago. The point is this. 10 days ago, on Christmas, there were zero publicly declared senators that were supporting an objection to the Electoral College results. My friend, Congressman Madison Cawthorn, the youngest elected member ever to the U.S. House of Representatives, who is now officially a congressman as of yesterday, announced that he was going to object at our Turning Point USA Student Action Summit. He was ridiculed, lambasted, attacked, slandered, but he actually led the charge in a variety of different ways on this. And Congressman Madison Cawthorn deserves a lot of credit for that. Same with my friend, Congressman Matt Gaetz. They objected early, and now you can see how this has grown. But 12 senators is not going to be enough. It's not. And we're going to dive into the three possible outcomes of what can happen on January the 6th and what power Pence has. Look, it's not often you get a gift for yourself, but I need to tell you about something that you gotta buy. It's called a hedge against all the craziness in the market. It's a free 22-karat American Gold Eagle coin. Not bad, right? A free 22-karat American Gold Eagle coin in a special presentation box. To qualify, you have to take out a precious metals IRA or 401k rollover with Noble Gold. Makes a lot of sense right now to keep your savings and investments safe. Who knows what the next administration will do or what's going to happen? So look, we don't know what's coming next, and you have to have a hedge. They're creating money. Austrian School of Economics is completely under attack. So if you guys want to hedge against all the market volatility, and we know what's coming, inflation is coming. Call 877-646-5347 and get the special coin offer, but don't hang around. That's 877-646-5347. Tell them that Charlie Kirk sent you. Again, that's Noble Gold, 877-646-5347. Okay, there are three outcomes of what can happen on January the 6th. We're going to tell it to you straight, constitutionally, and we're going to go right into this through with historical context in a way that many other programs are kind of tap dancing around what's happening. Let me begin by saying these three outcomes have separate consequences and arguments behind them. I don't love the place that we're in right now. Let me make this very clear. I do not believe that our founding fathers wanted as a default mechanism a parliamentarian body to decide U.S. presidential elections with regularity. For example, in Britain, the way that they appoint leaders is through a parliament. It'd be no different than choosing a Speaker of the House. So Nancy Pelosi became Speaker of the House again for another term yesterday, barely. That's how they want presidential elections to work. That's how Boris Johnson is put into power. That's how a lot of Europe works. The founders never designed a system like that. They wanted a state-based system, and as a firewall against election misfires, they wanted a process to be able to remedy election fraud issues, irregularities, and elections becoming overly political in the tabulation of votes. So let me say this again. I don't love where we are, but that is completely irrelevant to where we are. How many times in life are you in a place or a position that you say, well, I don't really want to be in this position? Tough. We're here, so let's deal with it. Only a couple times in American history have elections gone to Congress for final certification. That's not the best way to word it. They always go for final certification, but they go in contention for certification. That's a better way to word it. The election of 1800, where Thomas Jefferson himself was running for the presidency, he was the vice president of the United States, and Georgia, of all states, was hotly contested. He decided, as the president of the Senate, the vice president of the United States, to put the Georgia votes in his category. He was running up against John Jay and other kind of founding fathers. This was the big leagues of American politics. These were guys that literally started the country. You want to talk about some egos? I mean, they started the country. Thomas Jefferson put it in his category. He ended up becoming the third president of the United States, on Mount Rushmore and well known as the father of the Declaration, University of Virginia, and many of the foundational ideas of our country. In 1876, we were in a Reconstruction phase. The country was divided post-Civil War. President Hayes was running up against Samuel Tilden, a Democrat. The Electoral College results was, I believe, 245 to 244. It was just one that separated the results. They go to Congress. They couldn't get a decision. The House and the Senate could not agree on certification. The Senate was Republican. The House was Democrat. And a great bargain and compromise ensued, which resulted in President Hayes, a Republican, becoming president, but Reconstruction stopping in the South. In 1960, Vice President Richard Nixon was running against JFK, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, for the presidency. Hawaii had widespread election fraud. JFK was called the winner on election night. The electors were sent to go support Nixon. But Nixon, because of public pressure and because of a mass media campaign, decided in his own words to put country above party, and unilaterally, as the president of the Senate, took the results and did not put them in his category, but put them in JFK's category. Now, that was not a breaking point for the election. Other states that were heavily Catholic, such as New Jersey and Illinois, were the real reason why JFK won in 1960. And he won because of voter fraud, specifically in Chicago. So there are three potential outcomes. Number one, the objections in Congress in the next 48 hours gain enough steam in the United States Senate that 50 objections can be found, and there's a gridlock and a kind of political paralysis that sets in, and no winner is able to be certified via Congress. This would trigger an 1876 scenario. This would trigger a Hayes versus Tilden tug of war. What then would happen is constitutionally, it would go to the House of Representatives. The House of Representatives, each state gets one vote. If every state voted in their partisan makeup, there are three more states that are majority Republican than Democrat, and Trump would serve a second term. That is if we can find 50 United States senators to object to the results of at least three of the six contested states. We've gone through the whole list. There are 12 that have the courage and the clarity to speak out. You need 50. We're short 38. I'm going to tell you something that is true, but sad. It is incredibly unlikely, and I will say almost impossible, that 50 United States senators will object to at least three states on January the 6th. I wish that was not the case. But unlike other channels and programs that are in the business of getting your hopes up so that you can keep on revisiting them, I'm not going to lie to you. It is unlikely that the United States Senate is going to have 50 votes to object. However, that doesn't mean it's over. So the first scenario is that the objections work. Unlikely. The second scenario, which is controversial but constitutional, is Mike Pence, Vice President of the United States, a friend of mine, the Honorable Mike Pence, listens to the objections, grants 2 hours per objection, which, if that is technically true, again, there's a lot of debate there. If there are 180 House objections and 2 hours per objection, it's a lot of objections. That's 360 hours of objections. Biden would never get sworn in. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think they're going to be granted 2 hours per state objection. And we're going to be covering all of this live as it happens. So our YouTube channel, our radio show, our podcast is the place to be. Other networks are not going to cover it. We will in real time. And we are actually going to name the names. We are going to go roll call on the U.S. Senate and tell you who votes, who objects, who abstains, and who runs to the hills. We're going to do that. But let's say that you have the objections and they fail. This is the third outcome. I'll tell you the second outcome in just a second here. And they fail. Despite what the media and certain weak, intellectually compromised constitutional scholars are telling you, Mike Pence does not have to accept the results of polluted and poisoned electors. He does not. Richard Nixon showed us this in 1960. The Electoral Count Act of 1887 said that the Congress approved the Electoral Count Act after an epic battle from the disputed election of 1876, President Hayes versus Samuel Tilden. But the Electoral Count Act, alongside the 12th Amendment, sets the ground rules for how Congress operates during the joint session of Congress to certify the winner of the Electoral College. Probably unconstitutional. And that's why Louis Gohmert sued, but our courts are completely compromised. Our courts want nothing to do with this. So the final outcome can be this. Believe it or not, there is a almost guaranteed way that Donald Trump serves four more years. It's this simple. Mike Pence listens to the objections. He listens to the claims and the complaints. And he says, based on the power and the authority granted to me as President of the United States Senate and my oath to the Constitution of the United States, I refuse to certify at this very moment the election results of Arizona, Nevada, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan. Therefore, no person, no candidate has reached the 270 majority threshold, and the United States House of Representatives shall decide this election. Gavel out. That's it. He doesn't have to grant the electors to Trump. I actually wouldn't support that. I think that would be a power leap. All Pence has to do is reject electors from states that are compromised. Some people say that's not constitutional. Then try it. Make them sue and get the Supreme Court into action. Because we have precedent that a vice president can reject state electors. Mike Pence has the power. And so he's going to be given two envelopes for Arizona. Two envelopes. Mike Pence at that moment, because the objections are probably going to fail. I'm just going to be honest with you guys. I'm going to tell it to you straight. The objections will probably fail. I've gone through this list. You're trying to tell me Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins and Mitt Romney and Ben Sasse and Pat Toomey are going to step up? No, that's already it. You're done. You're at 48 before you even start. Okay? Wish that wasn't the case, but I did go through the courageous Republicans that are trying to start building momentum. Okay. So let's say we're at 48. Mike Pence, because he has plenary power, has a choice. Do I take the Trump electors or do I take the Biden electors? Let's say for Arizona. He's going to be getting pressure to just put the Trump category or the Biden category. I think he should put them aside and say none. Those states' electors are too much in question. I am not one to say Trump or Biden. No electors. He has the absolute and complete constitutional authority to do that. There will be other scholars that come out and say the opposite, then ask very clearly, how did Richard Nixon do that in 1960, and why was that never challenged in the United States Supreme Court? And if it's unconstitutional, then fine, sue. And again, that will not make Trump president. What I am recommending right now will not necessarily make Trump president. That will bring it to the House of Representatives to decide the election, which is where the founders wanted it to be. The Senate's involvement in this has always been statutory. It's been suspect at best. They wanted the House to be able to decide. So once it goes to the House, each state gets one vote. There are competing forces and opinions that are saying Mike Pence does not have that power. Plenty of scholars and judges, former and current, have said remains to be seen. Then do it and make them sue and get the court into action. For those of you that are listening in Georgia right now, you have a moral obligation to reelect Senator Loeffler and Senator David Perdue. Anyone who tells you to boycott the Georgia runoffs is doing the handiwork of Chuck Schumer and the arsonist Democrats. Nothing like sticking it to the establishment Republicans, like electing Democrats. Let me tell you something that is so clearly morally. This is a law. It never is a good thing to elect a Democrat. That's it. It is never the moral thing to elect a Democrat. Is it always a good thing to elect establishment Republicans? Questionable. But when you have binary choices, some people say, well, I don't like binary choices. You haven't lived a complex enough life to understand that sometimes life is black and white. It's that simple. Do I fire this person or not? Do I hire this person or not? Do I sign this loan document or not? Stop living in some sort of multidimensional underwater chess game that my boycott is going to send a message. You're an idiot. It is never a moral thing to elect a Democrat, especially like Warnock and that teenager that's running for office named Ossoff. There's a lot more I have to say about that, but please just elect Loeffler and David Perdue so I never have to talk about this again. This week is massive. This week will decide whether or not a January 20th inauguration will include or be for Joe Biden or for Donald Trump. All of this kind of rests on objections that are now mounting in unprecedented fashion and form from Senator Ted Cruz to Tommy Tuberville. I have the full list here of all the good guys. Plenty of not so good guys, let me tell you what. Steve Daines, friend of mine, he's great. Ted Cruz, Tom Cotton is not. I want to get to that later on. Tom Cotton is not objecting. Bill Hagerty, Josh Hawley, Cynthia Lummis, James Lankford, Roger Marshall, who is a total surprise, James Inhofe, really pleasantly pleased to see that, truly. Ron Johnson, John Kennedy, Mike Braun, and Marsha Blackburn. I might be missing one. If I am, I apologize. 180 House members and growing plan to object, led by Kevin McCarthy. And so once you object, it goes into the different chambers, and we talked about the three different outcomes. Number one, the objections work. Number two, Mike Pence refuses to count the polluted ballots. Number three, the objections fail, Pence counts the failed ballots, and Biden becomes president. So result number one, Trump will win. The objections are likely going to fail. It is very unlikely that 50 United States senators are going to object on January the 6th. That might be an uncomfortable thing to talk about, but it is true. Cruz, Johnson, Hawley, Lankford, Daines, Kennedy, Blackburn, Braun, Lummis, Marshall, Hagerty, Tuberville. Good for all of you. Thank you, I should also say. So Mike Pence, according to people I have talked to and certain sources that I know, is under the impression constitutionally that he does not have the power to not count the votes. The Constitution says very clearly the president of the Senate in the presence of Congress shall count the votes from the Electoral College. However, what it actually means to count votes and to count ballots is open for interpretation. 1960, Richard Nixon basically did as he chose, in defiance to certain certification of the states. Let's go to Mark Levin. Mark Levin, cut 18, of how Mark Levin argues that this is an unconstitutional election. Cut 19.
So what happened in Pennsylvania between 2016 and this election? The governor of the state, the secretary of state of the state, two left-wing Democrats, the majority on the Supreme Court elected 5 out of 7 Democrats. All of them conspired to change state law that was passed by the state legislature. They destroyed the election laws in Pennsylvania to accommodate Joe Biden and the Democrat Party. They violated the specific language of the federal constitution because they had a Republican legislature and they needed to go around them.
Play cut 21, where Mark Levin says clearly, I don't have to prove that there was a single fraudulent ballot. Play cut 21.
And I don't have to find one damn fraudulent ballot to make the point that what was done in Pennsylvania by the Biden campaign, by the DNC, by the state Democrats, and by their officials violated the federal constitution. Period. Whether there's fraudulent votes or not, and there are, and a lot, but they violated the specific language of the federal constitution because they had a Republican legislature and they needed to go around them.
And so, very clearly, Mike Pence has the authority, because this was an unconstitutional election, to not count the ballots that changed their election law in defiance to the wishes of the state legislature. That would make this election go to the House of Representatives. Now, if this was the plan, and if this was the last resort option, then President Trump and his team should have announced this a month ago, so we could have prepped the American people and with it the media that this was coming. It's too late for that. Mike Pence has the power. He is overseeing the entire process as the president of the Senate, and he can choose not to count ballots that are completely and totally fraudulent and were certified unconstitutionally. Now, if Pence did this, he would immediately be challenged in court. Okay. Whether he would win that court challenge or not, I don't know. Remember, Pence is going to be presented with both envelopes. Let's take Arizona, for example. Electors for Trump, electors for Biden. According to the Electoral College and the state certification, the governor of Arizona says electors for Biden. The other hand, electors for Trump. The moral thing to do and the constitutional thing to do, unless otherwise clearly stated, which has not been done, is to say, I will not count these, or he'll count both of them, which is a net zero. It wouldn't allow that threshold to be reached. I don't like that idea as much. Pence has plenary power. So Pence should say, I'm not counting Nevada, Arizona, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin. Sue me. And if we lose in court, then so be it. Mark Levin says very clearly, I don't have to prove that there was a single fraudulent ballot. This is cut 21. This is critical. The entire election was unconstitutional in the way that election law was changed in defiance from not going through the state legislatures. Therefore, the president of the Senate in any of those states should reject those electors, whether they were for Trump or for Biden. Mark Levin has the best point here. Mark Levin is saying very clearly, it is actually irrelevant whether or not there was fraud. There was. Hard to prove. You know what's easy to prove? It's not hard to prove for us. We see that we had a whole whiteboard. We could bring it back out. We're going to have a whiteboard tomorrow about all sorts of different things. That's not the point. The point is that a judge doesn't want to engage into it. Okay. But you know what a judge should want to engage into? That the United States Constitution says that the state legislatures shall be the ones that change election law. That's not what happened here. Secretary of States, operating under their own authority outside of the state legislatures, changed election law. Therefore, the entire election is invalidated. So I'm going to repeat this throughout this hour a couple times, and we are the only program outside of the great one, Mark Levin, that's going to say this. Mike Pence does not have to count the ballots from states that violated the United States Constitution. He doesn't. He can say, I have both of them here. President Trump and Joe Biden will not be rewarded the electors from Georgia. They will not be awarded the electors from Nevada, Arizona, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan. What happens next? And what's the strategy from there? It's actually super clear, but it's also incredibly hard. It's not hard in the sense that it's difficult to navigate. It's hard because of the backlash for the president to serve a second term would be immense. People are trying to say that President Trump is trying to overturn the election. This is nonsense. President Trump is trying to clarify the election, that the actual winner of the election gets made perfectly clear. January 6th is really a question as to whether or not that document called the United States Constitution actually has any power any longer. It's very simple. The objections are going to happen. 12 U.S. senators, more no than yes, but still significant. They'll likely fail, and then it will be up to Vice President Mike Pence. It'll be in his hand to either count the electors for Trump, for Biden, or not count them at all. We believe the most constitutional fair option is not count them at all. It then goes to the United States House of Representatives. Now, mind you, at that moment, the entire country would go into bedlam, which is why if this was their strategy, they better communicate this very soon, or else there will be civil unrest. There will be uprisings. The media will absolutely lose it. So what? These elections were conducted unconstitutionally. Now, if Mike Pence does not do this, and he certifies after the objections fail for Biden, then it really kind of is over at that moment. The gavel slams. That's it. But Mike Pence can say, he could even delay. He can say, you know what? As the president of the Senate, I have plenary power. I'm not going to count these. We are not going to count these. If that happened, the electoral count would be about 233 for Trump. I think like 230 for Biden. The point is no one would get to the majority needed at 270. Then it goes to the House. That's when the real chaos will start. And if the House then decides that Joe Biden legitimately won Georgia, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Arizona, Nevada, well, then that's what the mechanism is there for. However, let's take a little trip back in the time machine. Back in 2004, George W. Bush had defeated John Kerry, and Ohio was the swing state. Without Ohio's electoral votes, it would have went to the House of Representatives, and with it, John Kerry might have become president. Remember when Democrats were calling for this? Cut four.
People must have every confidence that every vote legally cast will be legally counted and accurately counted. But constantly shifting vote tallies in Ohio and malfunctioning electronic machines, which may not have paper receipts, have led to additional loss of confidence by the public. As elected officials, we have a solemn responsibility to improve our election system and its administration. We cannot be here again 4 years from now discussing the failings of the 2008 election.
During the House debate, Kevin McCarthy, who's been terrific on this, by the way, thank you, Kevin McCarthy, for objecting and for leading the troops to do the same. My friend Kevin McCarthy deserves credit for this. He wants to be speaker, and this is a good way to become speaker, is fight the tough fights. He should play that tape clearly on the House floor. The question is twofold. Number one, is Pence getting bad constitutional advice that he doesn't have the power to do this? And we don't know that. The Supreme Court has not ruled on that. And if the Supreme Court comes out and says it's unconstitutional for the president of the Senate under his plenary power, granted him by the Constitution, given by the founding fathers, and unchanged and unratified, does not have the power to not count ballots that were done so for that were done unconstitutionally, then that would be final. But if it goes to the House, we have picked presidents through the House before. We talked about 1800, 1876, and 1960. Know the history. In our fast-paced world, it's time to make reading a priority. At least it used to be. A new app called Thinker, you guys have heard me talk about it, thinker.org/Charlie, T-H-I-N-K-R, has solved that problem by summarizing the key ideas from new and noteworthy fiction, giving you access to an entire library of great books in bite-sized form. Read or listen to hundreds of titles in a matter of minutes, including old classics like Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. If you want to challenge your preconceptions, expand your horizons, and what? Become a better thinker. Go to thinker.org/Charlie. That's thinkr.org/Charlie to start an extended free trial and put your mind in motion. Let's go to cut 10 of Representative Elise Stefanik saying she will object on January the 6th.
As the representative for New York's 21st congressional district, I plan to object to certain contested electors on January 6th. I am committed to restoring the faith of the American people in our elections that they are free, fair, secure, and according to the United States Constitution.
Good for her. She deserves credit. And she is in leadership of the House of Representatives. She was once the youngest woman ever to serve in the House of Representatives. Now the youngest member label goes to Madison Cawthorn, who is a sitting member of the U.S. House of Representatives. In addition, the Democrats are predictably attacking anyone who is coming out to object to the results as a traitor to the United States of America. Let's play cut 14, where Joe Scarborough says just that.
They've remained quiet while the president of the United States has tried to conduct a coup against a democratically elected president-elect. And now they are engaging in acts that are helping the president's attempt to pull off sedition against the United States of America.
A coup. Now, of course, they were silent when an actual coup was launched against President Trump 4 years ago. It seems as if liberals don't want us to live in their country anymore, and that feeling is increasingly mutual. When they call us traitors, as if we need to be hung because we're enacting treason. It's a dangerous framing of the argument when you call people you disagree with traitors to the United States of America. You might mind you, Republicans don't use this language because we know that if you call someone a traitor, it's punishable by death. And so will Mike Pence make the decision not to count the ballots from each state that is in contention? We don't know. But to be very honest and very clear with all of you, I know you would expect nothing else or nothing less from us. That's probably the only option for President Trump to serve a second term at this point. That's it. There are not enough of senators that have a backbone to fight. We do not have a majority in the House of Representatives, despite Nancy Pelosi saying it's not a conspiracy theory not to talk about voter fraud. Let's play cut 5.
Our very democracy depends, again, on the confidence of the American people in the integrity of our electoral system. So, my colleagues, please don't talk about this about a conspiracy theory. It's not about that. It's not about conspiracy. It's about the Constitution of the United States.
It's about the Constitution of the United States. Isn't it amazing how they love the Constitution when it just fits their radical, ridiculous agenda? So that's it. It is that clear. Three options. Number one, magically in the next 48 hours, senators rise up, House members rise up, Democrats say, you know what? I don't want a Biden presidency. And the objections work. The other option is the objections fail. And Pence follows the certification of ballots and results that are flawed, fraudulent, and unconstitutional in nature. Or Mike Pence refuses to count ballots from states that acted unconstitutionally with remarkable overwhelming evidence of fraud. If that final scenario happens and it goes to the House of Representatives, the circus will ensue, of course. That's why we're here. to help make sense of all of this. And each state gets one vote. South Dakota gets the same amount of vote as California, and that will determine the next president of the United States. It's really that clear. None of it is easy in the sense that the backlash, the spine that it would take, the backlash you'd have to endure, the spine that it would take to win that argument, to push back against that backlash is significant. The courts have little to no interest in engaging in this, but the one way that you can get the courts into action is if Pence acted with the authority, the plenary power that he absolutely has. Now, Senator Ted Cruz has suggested and recommended a 10-day commission, 10-day delay. Mr. Cruz and 10 other Republican senators have proposed the creation of an election commission to investigate claims of voter fraud in certain states within 10 days and said they would vote to reject the electors for Biden on Wednesday until one was formed. There is little chance one will be. That's what the New York Times has said. Okay. But the sequence is this. Pence rejects electors from states that are in contention, as other vice presidents have in the past, even if they're involved in the election. That'll go to the House. Pence will immediately get sued. The Supreme Court will convene. They'll determine whether or not Pence has the authority to do that, which he does. Other vice presidents have done it before. And then the House will vote. Now, also, don't underestimate the power of the 24 hours of debate. The 24 hours of debate in the Senate and the House. Also, what about the state legislatures that could also recall and decertify some of these election results? The Trump team, including Rudy Giuliani, who's on our third hour of our radio program and also on our podcast and our YouTube channel, so make sure you check out the podcast, has said that the state legislatures could decertify. Now, I said this on my podcast today. I encourage you guys to check it out. The lack of a long-term strategic plan here from whomever is calling the shots on behalf of the president here when it comes to Mike Pence might be the downfall of this whole strategy. If, as soon as we started to see the election results go in a troubling direction where we started to see the fraud pile up and all this, if the Trump team would have said, we are not going to certify via Mike Pence's decision on January the 6th unless we get this cleared up, the framing would have been Joe Biden is not president-elect, and the Democrats would have been put on defense. We would have put on offense despite what all the fraud was happening. And then we would have had a long period of time to win over public opinion, win over senators, and then use the Georgia runoffs as a way to get broad-based support from the United States Senate. Mitch, you want Donald Trump to go visit Georgia? Then you got to get the Senate in line on January 6th not to support all of these different measures. That would have been a proper course of action. Instead, it's like a circus. And I'm not blaming anyone in particular because it's really uncharted territory. It's unprecedented. But things were moving so fast that in November 10th or November 12th, it would have done everyone a lot of good if the people in charge of crafting the strategic plan would have turned off all their devices, would have opened up the United States Constitution and gamed this out and first asked themselves the question, are they willing to go constitutionally scorched earth or do they just want to go through the motions? The president, he's willing to fight all this through. Other people, I don't know. Some people that are doing this, I don't like to attack people's motives. It feels like, though, some people that are doing this for political theatrics. Look at me. And by the way, it's kind of irrelevant. The intentions here are completely and totally irrelevant. If you're objecting and your intention is for your own selfish political game, so what? You're doing the right thing. I hope you benefit from it. However, properly charting this out and putting the Democrats on defense saying, no, you have to prove that this election was not stolen. in Arizona, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Nevada. Instead, now the framing of the media, because we let it happen, was that somehow we're the ones that are trying to overturn the election. No, they're the ones that are trying to uphold a fraudulent election. It's a completely different thing. And for those of you that are just tuning in on the radio program or on the live stream, it's really this simple on January the 6th. And this is the only course of action because the objections are going to fail. There's not enough senators. We've gone through the list word for person by person. It's not going to work. But Mike Pence listens to the objections, gets the results and the slate of electors for the six states that are in contention and say very clearly, neither candidate receives their electors because of the unconstitutional, fraudulent nature of the way this was conducted. Let's listen to cut six, Bernie Sanders, who said this back in 2004.
But I agree with millions of American citizens that no American should have to wait 4 hours to cast a vote. I agree with tens of millions of Americans who are very worried that when they cast the ballot on an electronic voting machine, that there is no paper trail to record that vote in the event of a recount.
I agree, Senator Sanders. That's why you objected in 2004. I think he objected. I think he was a congressman at the time. Anyway, I don't need to go into the political history of Bernie Sanders here on the short time we have remaining. That could be on a different program when we study Soviet Russian history. The essence is this. Mike Pence decides as the president of the Senate, plenary, unilateral, total authority, unitary executive theory, not to count, goes to the House. Once it goes to the House, Donald Trump should win. A lot of you are emailing us, freedom@charliekirk.com, saying, Charlie, you make this so simple and so easy. Why is this being so complicated? It's because this is going to be the toughest fight. The question is, are we ready for it? What, are we willing to put everything on the line to do this? Or do we just want to roll over? But I want to get into cut 16, which might be one of the dumbest things I have seen come out of the U.S. Congress in the recent history. This guy was asked to pray Representative Emanuel Cleaver, right? And he ended the prayer by saying, amen, and a woman. Play tape.
We ask it in the name of the monotheistic God, Brahma, and God known by many names, by many different faiths. A man and a woman.
Did he pray to Brahman? No, I think he prayed to Brahman, didn't he? Now, Brahman is a universalist principle. He called it the monotheistic God. Yeah, he sounds so incredibly intelligent. But for those of you that missed it, let's play this tape again from the theologian, Representative Emanuel Cleaver, who is tasked with praying in front of the House of Representatives. Why anyone would give this guy stage time? I mean, this is your government. Play tape.
We ask it in the name of the monotheistic God, Brahma, and God known by many names, by many different faiths. A man and a woman.
Okay, there is so much there. I could do an hour and a half podcast on that. This guy in 17 seconds managed to make such a complete. So this is what happens, by the way, if you allow that teenager and the communist to become a U.S. senator in Georgia, Warnock and Ossoff. People like this are going to be running the United States Senate. You will be handing the keys to these radicals. So he ended his, I guess that's called, was it a prayer? Was that what he was doing? I have heard a lot of prayers in my life from many people, different faith traditions. I've never heard anyone say, I pray to the monotheistic God. He did say Brahma, the Hindu God. That's fine. If you believe in that, I'm not going to attack. It's just very bizarre. And then he ended by saying, amen and a woman. As if when we say amen, you do know it's a Latin phrase for so shall it be. Not we're saying amen because we believe in some sort of phallologocentric patriarchy system of Western oppression. You see, this is how you know your society actually has less problems than the people who are professionally in charge of finding them. How do you know this? You have to spend your time as a House of Representatives member ending a Latin prayer by all of a sudden saying a man and a woman. No, that's not what it means. Brahmin man. Just making stuff up. We did get a couple emails on this, freedom@charliekirk.com, and I did want to make sure I spent some time on it. I'm going to have to kind of reflect further on the right way to dissect this. It's such a sensory overload that this guy, the priest, Representative Emmanuel Cleaver, he's not a priest, I'm saying that facetiously, who gave the prayer. Oh, he actually tweeted about it. I was honored to deliver the prayer. This is what he said. I was honored to deliver the opening prayer for the 117th Congress. May God bless each, every one of you, represented with the courage of wisdom, defender of democracy and liberties we hold so dearly. The tone and tenor of the left is to be confidently wrong about almost everything. Remember, this is a party that booed God and removed God from their convention this summer and 4 summers ago. So, Representative Emmanuel Cleaver, congratulations. You have said the stupidest thing I've heard this entire year. Not saying much. But actually, there have been some real gems. I want to reinforce this point. Pence has the power. Until the Supreme Court rules in a different way, Pence has the power to deny the electors from the states in question, which would make that no one gets to the 270 electoral votes. It goes to the House and they vote from there. Will that happen? I do not know, but it can happen. The roadmap is very clear. Is it a high threshold? Yes. Are the stakes high? Absolutely. But here are some questions that we have. Why is John Barrasso not objecting? John Boozman, Richard Burr, Shelley Moore Capito, John Thune, Tom Tillis, Patrick Toomey, Dan Sullivan, Richard Shelby, Roger Wicker, Todd Young, Rob Portman, James Rich, Mitt Romney, good luck. If anyone lives in Utah right now, please just run against him. I don't care if you've never run for anything before. I don't care if you're dog catcher in Provo. Just run. Everyone run against him. Find some way to do that. I will personally go and support you. Marco Rubio, I'm going to hold out some hope he might do something here. Ben Sasse, no chance. Rick Scott, Tim Scott, Ted Cruz, thank you for coming out. Steve Daines, amazing. Mike Crapo, nowhere to be found. Joni Ernst, really glad we all gave Joni all that support, right? Against Teresa Greenfield. MIA, nowhere to be found. Deb Fisher, Bill Cassidy, Susan Collins, John Cornyn, Kevin Kramer, John Hubbin from North Dakota, Sidney Hyde-Smith, nowhere to be found. Lindsey Graham, remember when he was begging us for all that support because he was in a tough race? Chuck Grassley, I hope he's going to actually object. Let's go to cut 28 of Ted Cruz explaining how he thinks this is the election 1876 strongest precedent. Ted Cruz, by the way, a dear friend, a good American. God bless Ted Cruz. Play tape.
I think the strongest precedent is the presidential election of 1876, Hayes versus Tilden. In that election, there were serious allegations of fraud in three different states, in Florida, in Louisiana, and in South Carolina. And what did Congress do in 1876? Now, they didn't throw up their hands and say, well, gosh, we've got allegations of fraud, but we can't do anything about it. We've just got to certify. Nope, they didn't do that.
And Ted Cruz is the one that is leading the charge on this. And Ted Cruz deserves a lot of credit for this. I want to go back to the Mark Levin tape here, which is the one that we really liked. We have like six Mark Levin. The great one was really on fire this weekend. I have to say, Mark Levin has been one of the best voices on this in a truly incredible way. Let's play tape of the great one.
And I don't have to find one damn fraudulent ballot to make the point that what was done in Pennsylvania by the Biden campaign, by the DNC, by the state Democrats, and by their officials violated the federal Constitution. Period. whether there's fraudulent votes or not. And there are, and a lot. But they violated the specific language of the federal Constitution because they had a Republican legislature and they needed to go around them.
Do we have the next, the other one of Levin talking about the state legislatures? Let's play that one, please.
Article 2, Section 1, Clause 2 of the United States Constitution, and we've talked about it here before, has been intentionally violated, eviscerated by the Democrat Party and the United States Supreme Court. Each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct. Listen to this language. It's black and white. The legislature may direct a number of electors equal to the whole number of senators and representatives to which the state may be entitled in Congress.
And so it's very clear that even despite all of the fraud claims that have been mounting with significant amounts of credibility, Mike Pence has the power and I think has the moral authority to reject the electors from these states. And some people say, well, he should award them to Trump. I actually don't have that opinion. I don't. That would be in direct defiance to what the Electoral College has said. Instead, you don't count them. You see, it's a two-step process. You have a check, you have a balance. The check and the balance on the Electoral College is the president of the Senate not counting them. Now, let me be very clear. I don't like where we are at. I've said this before. I don't like the fact this is now going to be decided by U.S. senators and by House members. Tough. That's where we are. The future of the Republic rests on it. Let's play Cut 29 of Ted Cruz calling on Congress to follow his lead. Cut 29.
They appointed a commission. It was called an electoral commission. Consisted of five House members, five senators, five Supreme Court justices. They considered evidence. They examined the ballots and they made a determination based upon what the disputed ballots and what the outcome should be. What I'm arguing for right. is Congress ought to do the same thing. We ought to have a fair inquiry, a fair audit into these results, and we ought to resolve these claims, not just dismiss them out of hand.
Thank you, Senator Ted Cruz, for leading so clearly on this. And also thank you, Senator Josh Hawley, for getting this whole party started. I think that Senator Hawley started a lot of these other senators, said, wait, hold on a second. We kind of want to follow your example. I want to reiterate this. Mike Pence is the president of the Senate. As the president of the Senate, he has the authority, the plenary power, to act in the discretion that he wishes. If he does not do this, and I'm not saying it's an easy decision to make. I'm not saying that you won't be the most hated man in D.C. amongst the cartel of Washington and amongst the inner workings of our deepest state of government. No doubt. People will hate you. Get in line. However, he has the power. Until the U.S. Supreme Court says differently, he has the absolute and complete power to reject electors from states that administered their elections unconstitutionally. And maybe if this goes to the U.S. Supreme Court, maybe the Supreme Court can actually rule on these election results. A lot of you have been emailing me here, freedom@charliekirk.com. Then why won't he do it? I don't know. And what can I do? Reach out to every single U.S. senator, every single one of them that's a Republican, the ones that have voiced their support. Do me a favor. Thank them. I mean that. Go and thank Tuberville, Hagerty, Marshall, Lummis, Braun, Blackburn, Kennedy, Daines, Lankford, Hawley, Johnson, Cruz. Go thank them. I mean that. And then go ask every other Republican why they haven't done the same. And keep the pressure on. And also, public displays of encouragement to the vice president, my friend, Mike Pence, to say you have the power and the moral obligation to reject these polluted votes. The latest polls in Georgia, one shows Loeffler down 2 points to Warnock. You want to know how to close the gap? Come out in support on January 6th, Senator Loeffler, please. Well, I'm still reviewing it. What are you reviewing? You know the election was stolen. And we didn't get a chance to cover this during our live stream, but I do want to cover this in Georgia. You want to lose the Georgia runoffs? Then have your turncoat Secretary of State Raffensperger illegally record a phone call with the President of the United States. You think that's going to help Loeffler and Perdue? Perdue had the correct answer to this. Cut 24. Perdue knows he needs the Trump support. Cut 24, David Perdue.
I don't think it's really going to affect our election. I'm still shocked that a member of the Republican Party would tape a sitting president and then leak that. It's disgusting in my view. But what the president said is exactly what he's been saying the last few months, and that is that, or the last 2 months anyway, we've had some irregularities in the election in November, and he wants some answers.
I mean, that's a better answer, quite honestly, than I expected from him, and that's fine. It's not some irregularities, okay? The entire election in your state was unconstitutional because of turncoat weak leaders like Brian Kemp and Raffensperger that care more about political power and political contributions than doing what is right for the people in their state. People are asking, Charlie, what happens if we lose Georgia? Say they cheat again, as if the setup again, what then, David? Well, that's up to Brad Raffensperger and the Georgia Attorney General to prevent Stacey Abrams from cheating again. Will that happen? I don't know. Should you go and vote if you're in the state of Georgia? Yes. Go vote and get your friends to do the same. It is the moral thing to do. It is never the right thing to go elect Democrats, ever. I'll close with this thought. Pence has the power. It's well within the Constitution. Trump can serve another 4 years. The question is there the will? Thanks so much for listening, everybody. If you want to email us your questions, email us freedom@charliekirk.com. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com. And to support us, go to charliekirk.com/support. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. God bless. Speak to you soon.